Fred Film Radio from the 76th Venice International Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Nicola Comotti here at the 76th edition of the Venice Film Festival, and today I'm joined by Mantas Kvedaravicius. Welcome.
Thank you.
So Mantas, you're here in the International Critics Week section, which is a very esteemed section of the festival. It's a satellite competition, but still one of the best films. Personally, I've watched it actually on that section. And you're here with your film Parthenon. It's been a real journey. Yesterday in the movie theater, just seeing your camera and the movement and the intertwining of voices, characters. It was always kind of like this, the idea of confusion and de-establishment, specifically for the audience. Sure. I just want to start with your way to create this, both on paper and into the actual shooting part, to, you know, this destabilizing kind of movement. How did you achieve it? It was actually all on paper for yourself, or it created, especially with the movement of the cameras?
Well, I think surely it's a quite a... complex process, in terms that it is based on the script, or at least it's not based on the script which has to follow whatever it is written. So I think wherever spaces and voices that somehow enter into the film set or in a situation which is filmed, they already kind of dictate their own logic and they exert their own power. So I think for us it would be interesting, how do we follow these impulses? How do we follow these impulses through the film? You know, both impulses, I mean, something that is happening with the characters, something that happening in the street, something that happening in a closed environment, and also that probably something that has happened. No, because I think for me the faces of the characters, like certain bodily habits, they I think also speak of a past which is present. Exactly. And I think that's why this aesthetical choice of the camera kind of trying to catch this wind of impulses.
And there's also a very strong study of spatial limitation in a way, both in a geographical sense and in an anthropological sense. So the idea of like going into the characters as close as we can, but we don't go beyond it. And at the same time, in the spatial part, we are both see something outside, but it's always on the sidelines, on the borders, and walls too. And especially the movement that you do, you know, and not only the camera movement, but the unraveling of the stories. It's always this idea of like pushing outside, never being on the center, never trying to see something that is going around, but like trying to study everything from the outside. Is it just me that thinks that, or is the idea of
surely, because I think if you just put camera and try to say that, okay, this is a certain kind of objectifying gaze which captures tentatively everything. I think it has its own, not only limitation, but it has its own, fraud put into it, because it presumes that we might know more than we do. I'm not saying everything, but more than we do. Well, usually we don't, you know, like we do. Usually we need, you know, someone. It's one of my teachers long time ago told you, if you want to grasp, you need to pursue shadows. You know, you cannot grasp the concepts directly. You need to kind of pursue shadows. So I think these slanted views might kind of open certain crevices where you can see things that you wouldn't otherwise be able to perceive. And I think this is a play of our perception, you know, how our perception work, but I mean not only our physiological perception, but our learned perception, because we have, through our lives, we have been taught to perceive things and put our attention in a certain way. So for me, maybe this is a kind of a little bit slanted view.
This is extremely interesting. What is your relationship then with the fraud of filmmaking, which means, you know, capturing images, trying to tell some sort of view of reality, but it's there's never reality in there. Mm-hmm. So how did you find a compromise? Or how do you see it?
I vehemently hate it.
Okay.
So I cannot... because they also, if one goes to kind of ask what does it do, you know, I think it's part of ideologies that makes a whole lot of suffering.
Do you think there's an ideology also in telling stories and how you do it?
Surely. I think, of course, story is a broad concept, but in a certain way... we had lived by many, many stories in the past that we now find out were kind of very cruel ideologies. So I think, for me, I would like to see this kind of to go into this aesthetical search path where kind of you are inside the ideology, you are inside the certain discourse, a certain aesthetic regime, but you still have to be aware. I think it's important to be aware of it. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of ideology you're creating, you know, like, is it kind of imposes your own view, which is actually not your own, but, you know, it's thought. So I think it's both attempt to go somewhere to not necessarily break it, but find a certain kind of little possibilities, not to repeat.
And in terms of the characters that you chose, and also maybe the relationship of them with the idea of symbols, of emblems, they represent somebody, they represent something, they represent much more than that. Like, it's we always have this sort of ghost, we see it for the film, this ghost of being an outcast for something much bigger than them, and they are the consequence of something much bigger. But you mix them all together. Sometimes, you know, there's almost this moment of like, who's talking? Are we within somebody, or is the other story? Mm. So how did you find this sort of balance between them that then creates the overall message in a way? But it sounds very stupid.
Surely. I think it's also because... again, what I said, the narrative that the people tell and the experiences that they have lived through are, for me, extremely strong.
Mm.
And they are not; they cannot be compared with factual information that we get from, let's say, mass media. I think there's something in each story, there's some specificity, some particularity, some singularity which suddenly opens up for you even with some emotional level or layer that you are not able to perceive by different sorts of communication. So for me, it is there that I think it's the gist of kind of my attention lies, that there are certain bits of a story, bits of the images that somehow kind of touches you beyond what you expect to be touched.
And do you also have a sort of fascination with the with these bits, with the story bits that you say, and the way that they are told, with the sort of annihilation of time as we know, because, you know, through memory, it's just present and past fused together.
Mm.
And in the film as well, you really create like this visual language that really conveys this idea, like, I don't know anymore in which time or place or city I am. So it was very important for you to create this sort of idea of like a dimension beyond time, or...
Yes, surely. I think films do that. They have the possibility of kind of reconstructing time and understanding time in multiple ways, or in different ways than we usually, with our kind of everyday life, we count time, and it's somehow almost linear for us. But I think this is just a very kind of very surface level of how we actually... where we live, you know, in past, future, or in other times. So I think for me this is an important moment.
And as you say, like, this is only the surface. Our conversation as well is only the surface of your film, so we actually invite everybody in Venice to go and watch Manta's film, once again, Partenonash, in International Critics Week. Thank you very much, Manta.
Thank you.
For being with us here at Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.